case is Unilock 2017 versus Google 2022-1031. Mr. Jackson, when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Apologize for the delay. I was getting my laptop open and ready to refer to the appendix if necessary. Your Honor, Unilock respectfully requests reversal of the PTAB's order in this case for three reasons. The first reason hinges on the claim language relevant to this appeal, and this is the middle paragraph that begins with transmitting by the stationary terminal. And if I could, I'm going to read an ellipsed version of that paragraph. It says, transmitting by the stationary terminal an invitation message, ellipses, to the proximate mobile device, whereupon the proximate mobile device establishes communication with the remote device. So the sending of the invitation message has to prompt the proximate mobile device to establish communication with the remote device. In Connolly, it works exactly the opposite. You have to have the established communication between the two mobile phones before what the PTAB identified as the invitation message can be sent to the local mobile phone. So that's reason number one. Reason number two, and Google is tacitly admitted this, Connolly does not disclose that the stationary terminal sends the remote device identifier. Now, they caveat that by saying it doesn't explicitly say that. But then we get into an argument, well, is it implicit? Is it knowledge of those of skill in the art? And the bottom line is that the PTAB only ruled on the ground based solely on Connolly, no other references, and Connolly does not disclose that feature. The third reason is that, frankly, the PTAB modified the petition by relying on the Guthrie reference. Relying on the Guthrie reference to disclose the sending of the remote device identifier. The remote device identifier is a claim element. And when you rely on a secondary reference to disclose that claim element, that's modifying the petition. The petition did not, the portion of the petition that the PTAB ruled on did not rely on Connolly for disclosure of that claim element. So the failure there is supplementing the record, whether it be solely based on Guthrie or Guthrie in conjunction with expert testimony. Either way, both of those were used to supplement the Connolly reference to show that claim element was present in the prior art.
You mentioned the record. I want to make sure I understand the record. As I understand it, Google presented expert testimony and an annotated version of the Connolly reference, mapping it directly onto the claims at issue. You presented no testimony, no expert support, and didn't try to depose their expert. The board looked at all this and said there's persuasive evidence on their side, and we review for substantial evidence. Do I have that all correct?
Yes, you're correct that Unilock did not present its own expert testimony, and my understanding is that the deposition of their expert was not taken. I wasn't involved at the time.
Fair enough. So, but how could we say there's not substantial evidence under this circumstance to support what the board found?
Because our arguments are based on Connolly itself, which of course is evidence, and on Guthrie itself, which of course is evidence as well. So when you read those references, you see these defects here.
Well, maybe when I read the references, but a person of skill in the art read the references and presented that reading to the board, and the board considered it and the contrary arguments and told us what they told us.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, I think the expert gave his interpretation of those references, which again, the references need to be, the basis of the grounds of rejection in, as Your Honor knows, in an IPR. And so they need to disclose the elements and not be supplemented or interpreted through expert testimony, which honestly fills the gap in Connolly by interpreting Guthrie and, frankly, I think even extending Guthrie a little bit. So if you, I also want to go back and emphasize my point number one, because I really don't think there's much of a dispute. Google didn't squarely address the sequencing issue in the claims. And so, you know, as a practitioner that's seen lots of these kind of briefs, I can see that that's a sensitive area for them. I think they recognize that's a problem. And the sequence, the timing about what has to happen first, is key, because it's right in the claim element. That sequence is recited in the claims.
Are you, if I'm understanding correctly, is this your argument based on the whereupon provision? If Google didn't focus on it, it may be because I'm not sure I even saw that argument in your opening brief. Can you help me with where that was?
Your Honor, I may need to do that on rebuttal if I could.
That's fine, but I guess that I thought that you all were clear in the most part of the briefing that the only dispute was whether or not the stationary terminal sent the remote phone's address to the proximate phone, and that was the only dispute. But now here today, your first argument is really not that. It's something about the whereupon and the relative timing.
I think certainly Google did characterize the dispute as being that lone issue, and I think that because they felt stronger about that. In our briefs, there are places where I'm not sure I would have phrased it this way, Your Honor, but we did say that, you know, we agree that there's one issue, but the issue that was articulated, and I'm thinking about a section in the reply brief that I'll have to locate for Your Honor, is more elaborate than just the sending of the remote device identifier.
Well, I hope you'll be able to find that in your reply brief, because what I see at pages 7 to 8 of the gray reply brief is the only dispute is whether Conley teaches or suggests that terminal 140 provides the SMS address to local phone 110 as the claim requires, transmitting by the stationary terminal, ... a remote device identifier to the proximate mobile device. Unless I'm completely missing this, that all has to do with the portion of the claim limitation that precedes the whereupon phrase. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. And again, I can't explain why that sentence is written that way, but on page 9, there begins section D, which goes into the whereupon limitation, which is this timing sequence, and deals with that in certainly in the reply, and talks about
sure.
The
and I guess that was sort of where I was getting is I see it at page 9 and thereafter in the gray brief. Why isn't that too late to make that argument?
Your Honor, I believe it is in the opening brief as well, and I can certainly look for that citation while Unilock's counsel is addressing the court.
Thank you.
And if I could, Your Honor, unless there are other questions, I think I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
We will do that for you, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Kessel?
May it please the court. I'll actually start briefly with what Unilock identifies as the disputed step. And if you look at page 7 of the blue brief, you'll see the only part that is bolded, what Unilock contends is the disputed step, is transmitting by the stationary terminal an invitation message comprising and then a remote device identifier. That was the focus and context for the briefing on appeal. And to that end, the question is really whether substantial evidence supports the board's determination that a computer sending an invitation text message would include something to identify the message's recipient. In other words, tell the message where it has to go. Google again submitted expert testimony in a corroborating textbook showing that a skilled artisan would have understood that the computer would include such an identifier in its message. In fact, the evidence shows that including this identifier, describing where the message is going, who's receiving the message, is the minimum amount of information that would be included. The board credited Google's evidence to find Conley taught or suggested the transmitting limitation, and that's enough to affirm the board's unpatentability determination. Unilock has raised a number of other issues on appeal, but none changes the fact that Conley discloses a computer sending a text message, the invitation message, to set up a secondary channel, and the skilled artisan would have understood that that message would include a remote device identifier. And Google respectfully requests this court affirm. to briefly address Unilock's reframing of the issue. They are now suggesting that Conley's first phone, not its computer, is what's sending the invitation message. They've raised and suggested that Conley, if the computer was the device that was sending the invitation message, that's somehow changing how Conley operates. Conley, in fact, teaches away from that specific operation because it has to wait for the phones to start talking. But all of that is ignoring the express disclosure of Conley. And if you look through Conley and walk through Conley, you'll see that's the case. And starting in paragraph 23, which is on appendix page 452, you'll see that Conley explains the first device, which is the computer, sends a small amount of information through the primary channel to get the process started. If you look on the next page, appendix 453, paragraph 26 in particular, you'll see that Conley says that in the SMS embodiment, what we're talking about here, the small amount of information would be a text message that's sent using the Bluetooth serial port profile. And then if you turn back to the previous page, appendix 452, and paragraph 22 in particular, you'll see that Conley explains when the computer sends the small amount of information, it sends the message to first phone 110, which then relays it across the primary channel to the recipient device. We discuss this in our petition mapping. At appendix 65 to 72, it's supported by our expert's declaration, starting at appendix 1298. There's no change to how Conley operates. Conley is not teaching away. Conley expressly says that the computer sends the invitation text message, and it does so to set up a second channel of communication directly between the computer and the second device. Again, the only question that was before the board was whether the computer's invitation text message would identify the recipient where the message is going. And as the board found, citing Google's unrebutted expert testimony and the corroborating textbook, a skilled artisan would have understood so much. That finding is supported by substantial evidence. And again, we respectfully request this court affirm.
Do you think the whereupon argument comes too late?
Yes, Your Honor. It's not raised in the blue brief anywhere, as I noted before. But also for the same reasons we just talked about, and the framing of Unilock's position that the phone is what's sending the invitation message, that's ignoring the express disclosure of Conley. It's just incorrect on the merits as well. Unless the court has any further questions, we'll rest on our briefing.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jackson has some rebuttal time.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. And I'd like to go back and address Judge Stark's question about where in the opening brief this argument about the sequencing was addressed. And it's quickly reading the brief. The best location I found was on page 28 over to page 29 in the opening brief. And I will summarize a little bit of what's said here, but it says in the, this is the bottom paragraph, the paragraph that bridges pages 28 and 29. It says, Connolly repeatedly emphasizes that terminal 140, that's the laptop, sends its IP address to phone 110 only after, and this is italicized, after phone 10 is already in communication, that's also italicized, with phone 112 over the phone and or SMS channel. And then there's two quotations from Connolly that are provided there in the parentheticals, or three actually. And then this says, all that fundamentally changes if Connolly is modified by Guthrie to allow the local computing device, the laptop, to establish communication, that's the claim language, and send the SMS. So this at least, I didn't read on further, but you can see in, this goes into how then Connolly would be altered if you change the sequence. If you change the sequence of who sends what messages first, now when you get over to figures 4 and 5, this looping to determine whether the channel has been established, which is what Connolly requires, it gets eliminated from the embodiments here that are shown in these flowcharts.
But you agree there's no reference to the whereupon provision of the Lin claims at pages 28 and 29.
The word whereupon, Your Honor, it's
the whole phrase from the claim.
Right. It's the concept is certainly here. I submit, Your Honor. It's you take the first sentence of that paragraph where it's talking about the timing, the sequencing, and then the last sentence, which ends with allowing the local computing device to establish the communication is in the SMS. Establish the communication is the claim language. It says, whereupon the proximate mobile device establishes communication with the remote device. And so not quoted, I grant you that's not certainly not quoted here in this paragraph, but the concepts come right out of this whereupon clause in the claim language. And they've addressed it somewhat in their response brief. Again, I think they somewhat tried to tiptoe around the issue because I think they recognized it was a weakness. But it isn't something that's new that was pulled out only in the reply brief. I also wanted to emphasize again that I think relying on the Guthrie reference as well as the expert testimony to fill that hole it doesn't even fill this timing hole, by the way. This sequencing is not addressed by Guthrie, the reference. It would, if you in fact merge those two together, require, as we argued here in the opening brief, that the principle of operation of Connolly would have to be changed. It wouldn't be allowed to sit there waiting for the communication to be established first. It would somehow have to initiate and cause the communication to be established from the beginning, as opposed to waiting to see if it's there. And so I think that the PTAB, by relying on Guthrie, certainly altered the petition, and in doing so, that's legal error. And I know that Google has asked for a remand if this court were to agree with Unilock in this appeal, and I'd point out that the second ground that the PTAB did not rule on, which relied on an RFC reference, one of the requests for comment articles or papers, that document was not relied upon to address this sequencing issue either. And so even a remand to address that alternative ground would be futile because it doesn't address this sequencing issue. The RFC was used to show a specific set of data that could be sent over a communication channel and put more concretely in front of the PTAB this idea that data such as a mobile device identifier could be potentially sent in that article. Again, Connolly doesn't disclose that. The secondary references may, but they were not part of the grounds upon which the PTAB issued its ruling. And unless there are other questions, Your Honor, I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.